again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. The show you're about to hear was recorded just before the incredible comeback victory over the Kings. Kobe with 37, DeMar with 33, Io with 20. These three players are definitely worth a watch as Bulls fans. And in the specific case of Kobe and Io, I hope you continue to invest your time in watching their development toward greatness. These two arguably represent the best under 24 backcourt in the NBA, and they are signed for a combined $21 million-ish for the next several years. For that fact alone, there is reason for hope. In this episode, Doug and I will discuss our navigation through the buzzsaw schedule, the high character individuals on the team, the Milwaukee meltdown, Batum, and a deep dive on the roster. Who will be back and do you want him back? I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I'm C. Red Fred, and I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, the Podfather, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
Living the dream. You know, it's interesting watching Bulls games these days because I don't know if I can think of another time where they were like so locked in to the place they're going to finish like this far in advance. Like, they got 22 games left in the season, and you'd almost say there's, like, no chance they're going to move out of the position they're in. Does that seem fair to you?
I would say so. Like, out of the teams below them, who would you say, I mean, considering Atlanta's lost their best player in Trae Young for possibly the remainder of the year, which one of the teams causes you any concern?
No one. Exactly. No one. Like, Atlanta, as we talked about last show, doesn't. I mean, the Bulls have a tough schedule, but Atlanta doesn't have an easy schedule, and then they just lost Trae Young for a month. And Brooklyn is like actively, I don't want to say like trying to lose, but they certainly aren't actively trying to win real hard. And, you know, the Bulls got a 4-game lead on Brooklyn. You know, Atlanta is probably going to be in a free fall. And then I think what they're like 4 games, 5 games out of 8th. Like, there's no way they're going to catch Indiana or Miami, right? I mean, so.
That's correct.
You know, so it's like you're just locked into 9. Like we're basically just waiting for the playing game at this point. And you know, whatever the enjoyment you get out of just watching Bulls basketball and, you know, any of the young players developing or improving and that is what you're watching for now. Like there's not really a lot of reason to get emotionally moved by a win or a loss, you know, given their position. So position in the playoffs. So now it's really just like looking at individuals and seeing like, are there things I like about what's going on, or are there things I don't like? And, you know, so that's kind of where we're at. It's a weird situation this early in the year to be there.
Yeah, I agree too. And with all the injuries the team has, I mean, when you look at it, 5 of their significant rotation players are either out for part of the time in Caruso. He seems to be in and out of the lineup. And I suspect they'll continue until the rest of the year. But you got LaVine out for the rest of the year. Patrick Williams out for the rest of the year. Obviously, Lonzo's been out for quite a while. And Craig will probably be back before the season's over. But, you know, these are key rotation players on this team that are just out. And a lot of them make a ton of money. So the fact that they're playing still pretty, I hate to say the word, competitively, to me does bring me some solace. I've been enjoying these games. That Cleveland game, I thoroughly enjoyed. I thought it was great that they won that one, and to see like a kid like, you know, OB or how do you pronounce his last name? Bidum? Bidum? Is that the best way to pronounce
it? So on the broadcast they're pronouncing it Batum, but then, you know, this is now going in the way, way back machine, but in the summer when we signed him to the two-way deal and I was looking up YouTube highlights, I could have swore they were calling him Bidum and not Batum, but, you know, so I guess we'll go with Batum for now, since that's what Stacy and Adam are going with.
Yeah, and going in back in time to what I did, what I called the buzzsaw part of our schedule, it's so like the Bulls to have a game like where they put up a stinker against the Detroit Pistons. We haven't recorded a show since that game, correct?
We've not talked about the Pistons.
So game. Before this really tough stretch of 13 games, you know, starting with the Cleveland Cavaliers on the 14th of February on Valentine's Day, they lost to the Cavs. They lost to the Celtics. They beat the Pelicans, surprisingly, in New Orleans, a team that had been playing very well. And then they lose to the Pistons and then beat the Cavs, you know, and then we all expect them to lose to the Bucks. So we were hoping for 5 wins in this stretch. We have 2 so far, and now they're going to be at Sacramento, at Utah, at Golden State, at the Clippers. So a West Coast trip, really tough stretch. The Mavs at home, at the Pacers, and the Clippers at home. You know, for them to get 3 more wins out of that stretch would, in my opinion, almost take a miracle considering where the roster is, the amount of players that are out. But I just want to see some of these young players like Bidham and Io and Kobe continue to play at a high level and develop. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that because you're right. We're locked in the 9. I'd rather see some of those young guys get some more minutes to hopefully develop than just kind of like running Io into the ground. Not Io into the ground. Kobe into the ground, but you know, even DeMar. What say you?
I'm mostly there with you. I mean, I think we'll win at least 2 of the next 7. You know, like, and is it a stretch to get 3? Like, I don't think it's a huge stretch. You know, here's the thing. Like, you look at, like, we're going to be underdogs in every one of those games. Probably even against Utah, that's the one you could argue that maybe we would be favored, but it's in Utah, so probably even an underdog in that game. Or whatever, a push. But you don't lose all of the games you're supposed to lose. You know, like, we just beat the Pelicans on the road. We just beat Cleveland at home. You know, so you don't lose all the games you're supposed to lose, and you don't win all the games you're supposed to win, you know, see the Pistons. So the Bulls overall are playing pretty well, I think. You know, like they're fighting the good fight against all these tough teams. Like, they're not getting the doors blown off, you know, for the most part. Like, even that loss against Cleveland that kind of kicked it off was a 3-point loss. You know, Boston, who's just steamrolling everyone right now, steamrolled us, but again, not too crazy. The Pistons loss was just just insane anomaly. Like, we shot 2 of 29 from 3. I just posted, if we just shot our season average from 3, we would have won by 14. So I just, like, I don't, even though it's a loss and whatever, and people, like, we outplayed them. You know, we got good shots. We just missed them. Like, you know, like, if you had that same shot quality and they had that same shot quality and you reran the numbers, like 100 times, we'd probably win that game, like 90 of them. You know, so it's just like this crazy anomaly game and not something to really get all worked up about. You know, I get why you get worked up about it, because it's the Pistons, but whatever. Sometimes there's just a lid on the basket, it feels like, and that was one of those games that, you know, the same shots on any other night, you probably win. So, yeah, they're playing pretty competitively. I think they'll win 2 to 3 on this next stretch of 7 games, and I think, you know, they'll still be kind of in good position at the end of that. Or the same position, I should say. I don't want to. Yeah.
I agree with you about that Pistons game. I posted a lot of, you know, angry comments and frustration, how upset I was about that game, because the Pistons aren't a good team. But they had been playing well as of late. They should have beat the Knicks in New York the night before, which one of the worst calls I've ever seen went against them. But, you know, those kind of games happen occasionally. You're going to lose to a team like the Pistons. It happens occasionally. And then you come back the next night against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you have a great story like Bidham come out. You know, we'll call him OB going forward. That's his nickname. And there's I ask everyone, if you want to listen to a great interview with him, listen to the interview that Casey Johnson had on the latest Bulls Talk. I thought it was excellent. And it just, after I heard that again, it kind of left me like, there are so many good players on this team, like as far as like good individuals, high character individuals. I really loved that interview. He was talking about how DeMar was so supportive, the team was supportive. I think getting lost in some of the frustration of this year, I definitely still like a lot of the players on this team. These are good guys. Even Vooch, who we both, you know, are very frustrated with, and we would both say that was a mistake in acquiring him. To me, it's easy to cheer for this team because every player in this team, for the most part, are really good people. If this was like a disaster or a 500 team with a bunch of jerks, I wouldn't be nearly as invested as I am. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? I don't know if you saw that interview, but these are really good dudes on this team, and for what it's worth. I know that doesn't bring you much solace when you're 4 games under 500, but at least I can.
I think like 95% of the players in the league are likable and good dudes. So I don't put a lot of value in that. Like, I mean, I appreciate that. Yeah,
90%.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate we have a bunch of jerks. And that, the thing is, like, the bar is so low to be a good dude when you are generationally wealthy and play a sport for a living, and you're only doing like interviews,
yeah,
where you just have to kind of sound like you care for like 30 seconds. And it's not to say those guys aren't good dudes underneath or whatever. Like, I'm never impressed with that. Like, this is kind of like the gold star achievement of like just showing up to a day in kindergarten. Like, oh, you weren't an asshole today? Gold star. Like, great for you. Like, I just think that's a low bar. And look, to be clear, I like all our guys from
come
my perspective.
Come on, come on, DT.
I'm not saying they're bad guys or they're not good guys. I agree, they're all good guys and they're pretty likable guys. I just think like, well, how many guys in the last like 25 years have you thought like, wow, that's just a bad dude? Like, how many guys in the last 25 years for the Bulls fit that to you?
Not many.
So how many?
But
name names.
Say,
how many? How many strike you as bad dudes?
Bad dudes. Let's go back and think of some.
So I got one, which is Tyrus Thomas. And that's it. I mean, I don't know if he's like a terrible dude.
He was a weird guy.
He was like super aggressive with the media. Would always like was very non-trusting. I heard he was like nicer on the team with teammates, but like he was a little standoffish. I mean, he punched Bobby Portis in the face. I mean, like, oh no, sorry, that was Bobby Portis that punched Nikola Mirotic. Never mind, I strike that. What am I thinking? Yeah, so Bobby Portis didn't punch anyone, or Tyrus Thomas didn't punch anyone. We can question whether Bobby Portis or Nikola Mirotic was a bad dude. If they're throwing punches, one of them probably wasn't super great. And the team seemed to side with Portis in that scenario, even though he threw the punch. But whatever, like in the end, there's like not many guys that I'd be like, oh, that was a bad dude. You know, and maybe we'll even say to go a step further, the Bulls don't have just an absence of bad dudes. They have guys that seem like they're really good guys. You know, like Io and DeMar seem like really good guys. Kobe White seems like a really good guy. So like they're even like a little bit further on the spectrum of just not being bad, but they seem like good guys. But like, but Luol Deng was like a really great guy.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say. DeMar DeRozan, there aren't many players of DeMar DeRozan's ilk that would, I personally saw him at a G League game watching, you know, Dalen Terry. Taking time out of your day on a Saturday evening to go support a teammate at a G League game, there's not a lot of players of that level that I think would do that. I think they're exceptional character. That's
doesn't move
saying.
Me, my
That's
watching.
My,
anything.
I like, guess.
Yeah.
Doesn't move you, moves me. I think in the long run, like I think he's a unique DeMar DeRozan to me on just how he deals with the media, how he sets example for his teammates. I've heard way too many good stories about him to say, you know, like,
I agree.
This guy's an exceptional.
I think DeMar's
character.
Exceptional in just that, put it that regard. Way. Like, I agree. Yeah. I agree with that.
So, I mean, big picture, yeah, I guess the rep to put a bow on this. Team is frustrating, 4-under, but I still cheer for these guys really hard, and I really like a lot of players on this team personally. Let's go to the Milwaukee meltdown. That said, guys of high character sometimes falter in games of high stress. I did not like what DeMar did in that Milwaukee game, which was a very competitive game, a game the Bulls could still win. I did not like at all what Vooch did in that game. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, the actions that happened in that game. But, you know, there seemed to be a lot of celebrating when Io took out Pat Beverly with a you know, like a forearm and the cheap shot that Vooch had on, you know, a player that had nothing to do with the play that he was irritated about. I don't know. It just really bothered me that our veterans in that situation kind of like completely melted down and couldn't handle some of the chippiness. What say you?
I think
on that Milwaukee game?
DeMar got fouled like 30 separate times by Pat Beverly before the frustration boiled over. And that was really just an atrocious set of reffing, that they were just allowing Pat Beverly to grab, hold, smack DeMar across the arm like 5,000 times. And so while I'm not saying I condone like
forearm in the
just,
back. Yep. Agreed.
Just shoving him after like trying to kind of like set a pick. He should have just set a clean pick and, you know, help firm or whatever. But yeah, I don't care. I really don't care about that. The Vooch cheap shot thing too. I didn't feel that was all that much of a cheap shot. Like, it was a hard foul. You know, like, I don't know. I didn't feel like he followed through like on the head or anything. I thought like maybe like I don't know that like 5 years ago. I don't even know if that's a flagrant one. And you know, they gave him a flagrant two for it, I thought was a little over the top. But, you know, whatever. None of that bothered me. Like, it just was what it was. I thought the refs let Pat Bev get away with way too much in that. And, yeah, you don't want to see the Bulls unravel like that. But at least they were kind of, like, standing up for each other in that sense. Like, you know, oh, you're going to play physical with us, and we're going to play physical with you. And again, like, the results of the games don't matter. So maybe even just seeing that they're standing up for each other and fighting hard for each other is actually the better takeaway and message, you know, going in here, is that they cared enough to, you know, to go at them and get physical and do whatever, even if it was over the top.
I'm going to take a contrarian view. I agree that Pat Beverly was probably a little bit uber aggressive and he fouled him several times. I prefer when officials kind of keep the whistle and get a little bit more physical, aggressive play. I did not think it was a foul on Bobby Portis. What frustrates me about that game was I just can't stand it when you have you allow one player, in Giannis's case, and I understand he's a superstar of epic proportions, but you can't even win. You can't guard a player. If he's going to cause the contact on 95% of the drives to the rim, and you're just going to call a foul on the defense every time, well, what is this? This is almost like professional wrestling. It's not even a game anymore, because you got to allow the defense to at least make some contact, some physical contact. And it's not a foul if a defensive player is running full speed backwards and the offensive player plows into you. It's not a foul on the defense. I couldn't stand how that game was officiated for Giannis. It was just way in his favor. But that said, yeah, Pat was a little bit over aggressive. Again, I don't know why we lost there. And I didn't think Bobby Portis, I thought it was more out of frustration. They didn't send any doubles, just Vooch alone in the post. Who's causing the contact? It's Vooch backing into Portis, who's simply just trying to stand up straight, and he throws up a poor hook shot, and then he's angry about it. Like, I didn't really think either of those two. I've seen a lot more egregious non-calls. Let's just put it that way in my history. So I was not happy with how they mentally just collapsed there at the end. I know DeMar's reasoning was he didn't like how Bobby stood over him. The goal is to win the game. You know, like, if we're going to let these guys get to us mentally like that, you know, I'm not happy about it. So I was not happy about how that team melted down. And I was far less happy when I read Joe Cowley's tweet about Pat Beverly afterwards. So I know there's a lot of jokes going around about Pat Beverly. You know, he wasn't as good as people said. We were 14-9 at the end of the year, and you and I both agree that was primarily due to Zach LaVine. That said, he still had an impact on the team. He still made the team better. Joe Colley's post reported last season, Vooch was instantly turned off by Pat Bev's demeanor in the locker room. He wasn't alone either. Just one reason he wasn't brought back. What did you feel about that? So that's a big reason we just let this guy drop, is because we weren't really happy with his demeanor in the locker room. I kind of pointed out that Pat Beverly had in public kind of called out slow and plotting defensive sequences from our center. Is that the reason he wasn't happy with him? Like, I don't know what your thoughts were on that, but I just talked about how nice some of the guys were on the team. You also need a few guys that have a little bit of nasty in them also. And I don't know. I was kind of irritated reading that quote. What say you?
I don't know. I think I'd be ready to, you know, punch Pat Bev in the face after like 3 seconds in the same room with him. So that doesn't shock me too much. Of course, you know, I'd probably be laying on the floor unconscious if I tried to punch Pat Bev in the face, but it wouldn't go well for me. Wouldn't go well for me.
Why do you say that? What is the reasoning? I haven't heard one good answer as to why.
He just seems like one of those like rah-rah, super hype, like in-your-face guys about everything. You know, like just like some play didn't go well and he's just going to get in your face and scream about effort. Or like whatever, like he just strikes me as one of those guys who's just going to be constantly just trying to rile people up emotionally and get people to bring it. And you know, like whatever, I'm not saying that's a bad trait necessarily, but that type of thing, one, has never motivated me when I played sports. It's made me more tense and doesn't allow me to relax. And I really dislike that type of leadership style. And so it just wouldn't shock me that other people would feel similarly to me. Like this doesn't help me. Like if this is what gets you going and like smacking the floor is what gets you going and whatever, like go ahead, you know, but like I don't know, that wouldn't move me.
You know, well said, fair point. And I know he wanted $15 million. He ended up getting three. I'm sure the Bulls could have negotiated a better probably deal with him. But when it comes down to it, we traded him for Javon Carter. We subbed out Pat Beverly for Javon Carter. And I don't know about you.
That seems like a take that was just made up because of this game.
A take? No, it's not at all. It was clear Vooch didn't like him on the team. He wanted him off the team. They let him go his separate ways, even though we could have easily just passed on that contract that we gave to Carter to Patrick Beverly. Instead, now we have Javon Carter signed for multiple years, who sucks. I might have been great with all the gravity that Giannis has. He wasn't even great there. He wasn't playing at the end of the season. That was a horrible move. In retrospect, it was a massive mistake. I'd rather have Pat Beverly than Javon Carter. Why is that a take that I just came up with?
Pat Beverly fucking sucks. You know I've always liked Pat Bev. That's why. Like, outside of this game, he got waived by Philadelphia trying to win a title. He got waived
compared
by a team
to Javon
trying
Carter?
To win a title, Fred. Waived. Just amazing.
What team did he get waived by?
Didn't the 76ers waive him?
What are you talking about?
Him?
What team did he get waived by? To,
they
traded for him.
What did they trade for him?
Yeah, it was a trade.
Okay. Now I'm bad. My whole rant is wasted.
I'm like, what are you talking about? Sixers Bucks trade. Let's Patrick Beverly to the Bucks.
Yeah, they didn't want him.
Second round pick. So they got a second round pick, another asset they could use in a trade for Cam.
They didn't want him.
Another point
the team.
They didn't
so
want
far,
him.
Yeah, he wasn't waived, but they dumped him because they didn't want him. They're trying to win a title. They didn't want him. He's not shooting well. He's not playing well.
He was good enough to be traded.
He's a trash player. The only thing you can say. The only thing
Doug.
You could say.
Doug.
No. The only
is
thing
he better
you can
than
say
Javon
about
Carter?
Him is he's having a better season than Javon Carter.
Yes,
this
he
year.
Is.
He's better. He's having maybe he's a better season than Carter because Carter is like out of the league level this year. But like Carter last year was dramatically better than what Beverly is doing this year.
He was not dramatically better
it's
than
not a ridiculous
year.
Statement.
That's a ridiculous statement. No, he wasn't. I wouldn't even argue that he's better because guess who played a lot more at the end of the season? That said, this is a very, obviously, this is something we're not going to agree on. I've always been a Pat Bev guy. You always haven't. And so
I'm
we're
not
and
always. What do you
like
mean I've never been a Pat Bev
beyond
guy.
The paper?
I liked him like
well, you just
I liked
said
him before
always,
he was old
kind
and
of
washed
guy would
up.
Irritate.
It's not like I've hated Pat Beverly his whole career. He was fine.
Did he not
he
play
fine-ish.
Well for the Bulls
like,
last
I'd
year?
I'd be fine. I'd have been totally fine if we brought
yes,
Pat Bev back
was.
For the minimum. Like I wasn't saying like, oh, this guy, you can't have him. But like, he's a minimum player. He's a minimum caliber player. That's who he is.
Dude, I'm irritated that the great recruiter is making roster decisions.
Well,
if you want
clearly
to sign,
he didn't gel with, according to Cowboy.
Pound sand.
He didn't gel with several players, and Vooch was probably just the biggest name of those players that was worth name dropping. I mean, the mistake here is that you signed Javon Carter, who was shooting 42% from three the year before, and then you know now he's shooting 33%. He's like 38.6 guy for his career, and he's now shooting 33% this year. Like, that's really it. Like, you brought in Carter because you wanted some guard shooting, and he's not delivered it. And he's playing, like, way worse than his career average is, you know, but he was, like, a decent point guard defender, you know, like if he's defending a smaller point guard. And he could shoot, and he can do a little bit of, like, passing and other stuff. But, like, that was really kind of what you wanted. And that would have been just fine, and it would have been much better than Beverly if he delivered on it. If Carter was shooting 40% from three for us, we'd probably be quite happy with him. You know, the real thing is he just fell off a cliff in his shooting.
That will happen when you only have Giannis's gravity next to you. If we could have brought Giannis's gravity, but
the thing
too,
is, like I think he's probably getting good shots. Like I don't think he's taking a bunch of contested threes. I haven't looked it up, but like generally the Bulls are generating good open 3-point shots with their players. Like, I don't think that's really the issue of like, he's no longer getting good shots.
Well, Doug, it's just common sense that you're not going to get as many good shots when you're playing next to Giannis. There's nobody on the Bulls even remotely in that stratosphere in terms of defensive attention. So like, I agree with you. He should be shooting a little bit better than he is, but like,
again, go look up his shot profile. Then you saying he's not shooting primarily wide open shots.
I am saying he's yeah. I'm saying that compared to the season before.
You don't think he's shooting wide open shots?
I'm saying
compared. All right, we're going to look it up now. We're going to find out live which of us is right on this. And I'm going to be super embarrassed if I'm wrong twice in a row in the same argument.
I'm just saying, last year playing with Giannis, I am certain he had more good looks at the rim with far people further away and not paying attention to him.
Who cares about at the rim? Or the thing I just said is he shooting? Like, is he able to shoot? Like, that's the question. Is he able to shoot?
Doug, there's Bulls open and there's Milwaukee open. And when you play next to a guy like Giannis, you're just going to have more shots where there's not going to be anybody in the same area code. So it's all good. I mean, you got to factor that in, and I agree with you. Who would have expected him to collapse to this level? But he's a basically unplayable player right now. Like, I don't think he's better.
Yeah, he's unplayable because of his own poor performance this year, which was not the poor performance he had the previous year.
Well, let's get off of him and get on to somebody that we should be a little bit more excited about, and that's OB, Bittum. What say you? So he had, what a game against Cleveland. I thought he played really well in that game. He had 10 points off the bench, shot the three well. He's been shooting the three well for the Windy City Bulls. Are you as excited as I am about having a guy on the team that could hit open threes?
I mean, theoretically, we have a lot of guys on the team that can hit open threes. And I don't know that he's played enough minutes where I'm like, oh, yeah, for sure, this is the thing. But, yeah, hopefully, right?
Like, for the G League, 43.3% from three. 83% free throw shooter. You know, I'm not saying he's the answer or anything like that. You know, average 16.7 points for Windy City Bulls, but just having a guy like that who's not afraid of the moment, is willing to take shots like he did, to just step in and start contributing. I was pretty excited after that Cleveland game. What do you think? Would you at least concur and agree that he should be ahead of Dalen Terry?
Ahead of Dalen Terry? I don't know. Like, I feel like Dalen Terry has played better, but I mean, I'm okay giving him minutes and finding out. Like, these guys are both emergency type scenarios. So, like, I'm okay giving him minutes and just seeing what happens with it. Maybe we'll leave it.
Absolutely.
Like, it's hard for me to say, like, oh yeah, I definitely think he's better than Dalen Terry. I don't know, maybe just a little bit of a change, but I feel like Dalen Terry has played a little bit better lately. And I don't know if you feel the same way.
Of course. I mean, it's hard to play worse than he had. He's definitely shot the ball
better.
That's
fair. Very fair.
But I highlighted in the game against Cleveland, he gave up a straight line drive to the great Isaac Okoro. If you're going to shoot as bad as you have for the season, you can't be giving up straight line drives to anyone. Anyone. And it was such an embarrassingly bad sequence of defensive plays that I was just like, for that one specifically, he didn't come in for the rest of the game after that sequence, and Bittum took his minutes. Like, I'm not high on him at all, just because I don't think he can shoot that bad and be in the league. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think he's good enough on the defensive end to make up for it. I do agree with you, though. He did play better. He's been getting a lot more minutes, a lot more consistent minutes. But what has impressed you about him? Like, why do you feel he's a better player?
I don't know that I'm impressed about him. There's been a few stretches where his defense looked like it was, you know, like game changing. Like, he got in there, kind of like we saw Pat Beverly just harassing guys and generating steals. And
I do love how hard he plays. You know, like, yes, you're right on that.
You know, he plays hard, and he's got positive energy. I just feel like he's maybe playing hard with more intent lately. Like, he's playing hard and less stupid. So he was always going hard and, like, you know, like 100% effort. But then maybe, like, early on, it just felt like his effort often didn't lead to good results. And now I see it more consistently leading to good results on the defensive end. And, you know, like I said, at the beginning of the season, and maybe even partially through, I thought, this guy is just not an NBA player. There's zero chance, like, absolutely zero. And now I'm not so sure. I think, like, I don't think he's going to be a great player, but I'm not so sure that he's a 0% chance guy. And Bittum, to me, you know, it's like very early, but it's kind of like in the same boat to me. Let's just see what you got. Let's prove it out. And, you know, yeah, I hope he gets some chances with the Bulls roster. I'm sure he's going to get plenty of chances to get minutes. And we'll see. We'll see. All right.
I want to do a really quick one of my favorite segments on the Big Red Bus is asking you, yes or no, if you want this player on the roster and will he be back on the roster? Yes or no. Okay. So let's start out with Lonzo. Do you want him back
for next year?
Yes, for next year.
No.
Do you think he will be back?
Yes. I mean, I don't know that he'll play, but I think he'll still be occupied.
Oh my gosh, which would be horrible for the team because we need that $20 million to make the moves that will create a contender, right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong on that?
It's complicated to create a contender. Yeah, we're Alonzo away.
We're Alonzo away, yeah, exactly.
It's complicated because I don't know that they'll be able to get medical retirement for him anyway. And so if they do, they probably won't get it fast enough to really reallocate the money. They would need to get access to the money early enough before they sign DeMar to maybe even do anything different than just use it to free up exception money and stay under the tax. So like, I don't think Lonzo's contract is going to hold them back super meaningfully this year, one way or the other. But what it might do is it might force them actually to negotiate harder against other guys because they want to avoid the tax. And if they actually free up Lonzo's money, they'll have a lot more room under the tax, and then they might be a lot more
generous. So in a way, it'll be a good thing.
So, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I mean, obviously, if negotiating harder leaves open the opportunity that these guys walk or do other stuff. But it will give them maybe some incentive to negotiate harder. The other thing is, like, you know, you need salaries to match when you're trading for guys. And so Lonzo, if he is out, is an interesting trade piece because he will cost $20 million in the cap, but he'll have $16 million of that covered by insurance. And so if you trade him to a team for a player, it's like saving them, you know, $16 million in salary if it's the offseason. And if you're trading around half the midpoint or whatever, maybe you're saving them $8 million in salary. So, you know, there's like some maybe minor arbitrage where using him as an expiring deal has like some value around the league. So, you know, I don't know that they'll be better off if they can move his contract. You know, like I want to move on from Lonzo era emotionally. I just hate these. An unfair Lonzo, you know, I don't know if you've seen all these clips that recently popped up of him working
yes,
out.
Yes, I have.
And then, you know, but he's not sprinting. And then there's this debate about whether it's, you know, whether this constitutes a delay and
or it's AI.
You know, like, whatever, just wake me up in July and let me know how he's moving then. You know, I just like whatever is happening now doesn't really matter. We already announced he's out for the whole year in like May of last year. So, I mean, what are we even talking about worrying about it now? You know, he's dribbling a basketball and doing basketball type moves. So even if things aren't 100%, it's clearly not zero. He's not sitting in a wheelchair or anything. But either way, like I just want to move on emotionally from Lonzo and just get out of this stuff. Because the odds of him coming back and being a meaningful player to me are so low. And then even if he does, it's for this 1 year. And then you're going to have to re-up on a new contract. Like there's no part of me that wants to sign Lonzo again, regardless of how this injury recovery goes. And even if he just goes on to have a great career, like I just don't want to be in that risk camp again, right? Like,
yeah, we're going to have to go a lot faster and run through this endeavor.
All right.
So OB, we know he's going to be back next year. He signed a multi-years on a very low contract.
We don't know. We don't know he's going to be back
next year. What do you mean? They just signed him to a multi-year contract.
He signed. Yeah, but the second year is almost certainly non-guaranteed. They did the same thing last year with Carlique Jones.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay.
So it's like they convert him to a full year this year. I don't know 100% that his deal's like that, but these conversions are usually, they guarantee you for the rest of the season this year, and then they lock you in at the minimum for like a number of years after that. But usually there's a non-guarantee, and you have to fight for the roster spot in the summer. So I don't know that those details have become clear or not, but with him, but that's how the situation typically
works. Javon Carter, do you want him back? No, right?
Not really.
Do you think he'll be back?
Yes.
$6 million a year, right? I believe so. That's how much he makes next year, which is kind of appalling. I agree with you on both accounts. Alex Caruso.
I mean, do I want him back is an interesting question because it depends what I can get for him in trade. But I think he will be back. You know, like I love Alex Caruso, the player. It's really just part of whether you want him or not depends on what your long-term vision is. But you can't have Alex Caruso on your team and feel sad about it. Like, he's an amazing
player. Exactly. We both want him back, and we both also will acknowledge that he would bring a lot in a trade. So therefore, the answer is yes, we want him back. We would prefer that we trade him for assets to grow.
If the right deal is
out there.
If the right deal is out there. And you feel like the right deal for what we would be doing if we ran the team is available, but who knows? So either way, yeah. I mean, I love Alex Caruso though. He's maybe my favorite guy to watch.
Absolutely, and he'll. I think he'll definitely be back to both. Torrey Craig.
I think he won't be back, and I'm indifferent to whether he comes back.
Okay. I think he'll be back, and I'm fine with that. It doesn't make enough money for me to get too upset about it.
Yeah, I'd be fine if he comes back on the minimum, but I think we'll just go a different direction given how many injuries he's had, and yeah. But we'll see. It wouldn't shock me one way or the
DeMar
other.
DeMar DeRozan.
I think he'll be back, and no, I don't want him back.
I think he'll be back, and if it's 25 or less, I'm fine with it.
I'll be fine with it too under the right salary circumstances, but if it's just
what is that number you'd be fine with?
I think, you know, if it was like 250, like, you know, 2 years, 50 million total, yeah. Like I'd be good with that.
Me too.
We'll see. If they negotiate hard, I think they can still bring him back on a good contract. I think they will not negotiate hard and they'll bring him back on a lousy contract, just like they did with Vooch.
Agreed. Io.
Yes and yes.
Agreed. Andre Drummond.
It's an interesting one. I'd say no, he won't be back, and yes, I'd like him
back.
Yeah,
me too. Me too. Why do you say no, he won't be back? Is this his expiring contract? Is he out after this year?
Yeah, this is his last year. He picked up his option this year. I just feel like someone else would pay him more money than we're going to. Mm-hmm. And
I agree with you.
Like he'd probably take it if that happens. And I also feel like if I'm Andre Drummond and the amount of minutes I've played here and how well I've played here, I'd be like, yeah, like you're not playing me as much as you should. Like, and everything speaking of good guys, we talked about, like, Andre Drummond seems like a great guy too. We didn't mention him earlier. Like every time I see an interview with him, I really love everything he has to say. And how he talks about being a star once, but now grinding and like, you know, he seems like a good mentor guy. I like Drummond a lot.
I do too.
I just feel like he's underutilized here. And I think from his perspective, I think he'd just look at it and be like, come on, man. Like I should be playing 25 minutes a game. And I think he can find that somewhere else. And I think someone else will pay him more fairly.
Zach LaVine.
It's another interesting thing because it just depends on so many other factors. But I'm going to say yes and yes.
I'm going to say he won't be back. And I will say, I mean, I like Zach LaVine so much. I think he's a good dude. Another one of those guys. Boy, this is a tough one, you know, because like I don't like selling at such a low level. So in that vein, I'd like for them to keep him longer. I think he'll perform very well in November, December, and then trade him before the deadline. So you actually create an asset. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls trade him and then attach an asset to it just to get him off the roster. That's how I feel this team kind of. This front office thinks about Zach LaVine. Would you be surprised if they did that? I would not.
I'd be a little bit surprised. I don't think they have enough assets that they're willing to give him up to get rid of Zach. And kind of my thoughts on Zach are similar to yours. Like, I'm okay leaving Zach. I think Zach's time as the man in Chicago is over, and we should move on. I just think that you're not going to find the offer you want to move on for in the summer. And you got to hope he plays better and that you can trade him at the deadline or, you know, a few months into the season.
I think that's going to happen. I think Zach LaVine's going to come back and kick ass in October, November, December and completely build his value back up again where we'll get something for him. And that might not be a lot. We'll get something for him.
It's a little quietly under talked about, but like the stretch he played after he came back the first time from the injury before he went out again was actually pretty solid.
Agreed. Yes.
Like his numbers were like for the season are actually not so bad as like you think they were, you know, because they were really bad for a while. But, you know, like he kicked up his true shooting percentage up to 57.8%. It was down in that first stretch around like 53%. So he was kind of playing in that stretch back up close to the level he was, you know, for a little bit. You know, his total points were still down and other stuff, but like he kind of picked it back up and he was fitting in better and was making a really concerted effort to fit back in with the team instead of just coming back and being like, I'm going to be the man, run everything through me. You know, he was taking a back seat to Kobe and other stuff. I kind of actually liked what I saw to Zach in that stretch in between.
Agreed, too. And you're right. Very few people gave him credit for that or even mentioned it. I thought he played very well. Very well. Not great. Not to the level that he was before at the end of last season between the All-Star break and the end of the season. But much more of a team-focused game, you know. And I agree, too, 100% with what you said. Julian Phillips.
Yes and yes.
Yeah, same here. Terry Taylor?
No and no.
Agreed. Dalen Terry?
Maybe indifferent and yes.
I don't want him back. He'll be back. Vucevic?
No and yes.
Yes, I don't want him back. He will be back. Kobe White?
Yes and yes.
Favorite player on the team? Absolutely want him back. He will definitely be back. Finally, the most difficult one, Patrick Williams.
Yeah, that's a tricky one, but it just kind of comes down to the contract and the
He'll
cost.
Be back.
You know, I think he will be back, and whether I want him back is going to depend.
And what would that deal be?
Much like I said with DeMar,
that would piss you off.
I think he'll sign a deal that I don't like him at.
I agree.
But
if you played hardball with him, like right now, what do you think he'd sign for? What do you think he'd get him for? Because apparently, according to all the reports I've heard, he turned down $16 million a year in the offseason. Do you think you'd get that this upcoming offseason?
Hard to say. Like, it really just depends on his health, right? Like, if he can't come in and like, he's not ready to work out and ready to go in July from the surgery, and he's not, like, fully at 100, I think the injury is going to really calm down the interest in him a lot. You know, and I think that's going to create an interesting scenario. Like, if I were the Bulls, I'd be like, yeah, here's Kobe White's deal. It's, you know, it's 340.
Oh my God. Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, here's Kobe White's deal. Sign it or else. I do feel, though, there'd be some team out there that might give him 15, 16, 17 million a year.
For what?
He's got enough prom.
I mean, let's be honest. Pat Williams is in his fourth year. You know what his points per game are? 9.2, 9.0, 10.2, 10.0.
Yeah. Coming off an injury.
Rebounds per game, 4.6, 4.1, 4.0, 3.9.
There's huge value in three at that level, though, Doug. And being a defensive.
Yeah, I guess.
Having the ability, at least, to play defense. So I think guys like that, he's got the size.
Shooting percentage, career low.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fine. Like, I just don't think, like, you're betting so much that he's just better than what he's shown right now.
Yeah, agreed.
And he's coming off a major injury. So you're gambling so much on, like, potential for a guy who's entering his fifth season and coming off a major injury, like, which could have future consequences. Like, it's just... I don't know. Like, if I'm another GM, like, I don't know that I'm putting a lot in that bucket.
Yeah, he's a tough one. I would understand if some team put a 3-year, $17 million a year offer in front of him, and then if I'm the Bulls, I'd match it. If you're putting $25 million a year for 3 years,
yeah, I mean, given where the Bulls are, I'm sure they'll match it. I'm sure they'll match it. Yeah, but whatever. I can't imagine a scenario where they let Pat go. Like, you've just seen nothing from these guys that would make you think they would ever do that, right?
Correct.
Like, they've never let go anyone that they cared about, that they brought in. Like, they've yet to let go any of their core pieces that they brought in. And, you know, Pat is in some ways like a symbol of their draft and blah, 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 because he was a number four pick, and they've never even brought in a meaningful guy to compete with. We have no other options on the roster. So if we let him go, like, it's not like you even have anyone. You hope Julian Phillips plays really well next year. Like, that's kind of it. So, you know, I think he'll be back no matter what.
Yeah. Agreed. They'll probably sign him for 3 years, 4 years at $20 million a year, which would anger me because I don't think he's worth that. But you're right. We'll see how it goes. I mean,
I think it's even going to be worse.
Bigger mistakes have happened. if I had my choice, I'd much rather sign Isaac Okoro, take him off for $20 million for 4 years.
Well, you're not going to be able to sign Isaac Okoro. So I don't know why.
I'm just going to throw it out. I'm just saying some team out there that's smart with cap space is going to realize that there's no way the Cavs can keep him.
Yeah.
And offer him a deal like
that. I wish we would just sign Nikola Jokic. If we just want to bring up things that are the same likelihood of happening, signing Isaac Okoro, okay, we might as well just shoot for the moon.
On the list.
I wish we could sign Wembanyama next offseason. He's not a free agent.
Here's my list of guys I want to sign. You know, I got Jokic. Let's see here. I got Jokic. I got Okoro. Is there a way you think we can get Steph Curry? He's on the list. I think these guys are.
Yeah, they're the same. All the same odds, Fred. I mean, and you know, actually, the odds of getting all three are the same as getting any single one.
How about
one
Luka?
Of them.
I like Luka, so too. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, why not? We can get him, too.
Last thing, as we bring the bus in, I did want to mention Wendell Carter Jr., who's a flashpoint for Bulls fans. 12 games before yesterday's win, Wendell Carter Jr. shot 58.3% from the field, 40% from three, scored 19 points yesterday and only seven shots, going 2-3 from three, 7-7 from the free throw line. He's 24 years old, will make $11.9 million next year, 10.8 in 24-25. The Magic are 14-8 since he came back from injury, with wins over the Knicks, Miami, Suns, Minnesota, and Cavs. My question for you, DT, would you trade, salaries aside, do you think Wendell Carter Jr. is a better player than Vucevic?
Yeah, I've said that for years.
I wonder how many Bulls fans would feel that and agree with that.
Well, most people are just, I shouldn't say that. There's probably a contingent of people that think like me and are like, man, this guy is terrible. Like there's like three or four stats I've listed where he's like the worst in the league at these like major offensive categories. Like, I don't know if you saw the one I posted recently where he is the worst efficient pick and roll man.
I did not see that, and I wish I would have seen that.
Yeah, so in the league, he has twice as many roll man possessions as anyone else, and he has the lowest percentage of converting them as anyone in the league by a large margin.
Oh, that's interesting. Considering I posted they run that
earlier,
all the time.
He was having one of the worst 3-point shooting seasons in the history of the NBA. So we got that, and he's like one of the least efficient post players ever. So like, look, it just the guy puts up volumes of points on just really, really terrible efficiency, and it's bad for your team. Every possession he shoots is bad for your team. It contributes to losing. And yet we give him a ton of possessions because he's also whiny if he doesn't touch the ball a lot. And he's a terrible defender. And so, like, what is he doing for you that's positive at all? Like, could you use Vucevic in a way that helps you? Probably, somehow. But we aren't going to use him that way. We're going to give him way too many possessions. There's really no shot that's too easy for him. That, like, you're like, well, if you get him in this way, he's going to be really good at it. He's just really bad at everything.
He's really good at, Doug, he's really good at standing by the basket, and when Io, Kobe, or DeMar drive, receiving the pass and laying it up and in. I can't tell you how many baskets he gets over the course of a week just from that.
Yeah, that's what any center can do.
But I know, but like, that's what people always like. He's got a double-double. He's a double-double machine. Yeah. It's like, yes,
yeah.
He's
well,
a good defensive rebounder.
He gets double-doubles because he scores a lot of points, and he scores a lot of points because he takes a ton of shots.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, well, like, said. So if you look at like points per game, DeMar DeRozan, 22.7 on 16.6 attempts. So Vooch is 16.2 attempts, 17.9. So for an extra 0.4 attempts, you're basically getting 5 more points out of DeRozan.
Yeah, that's a free throw line.
You know, it's the same. Like all the Kobe White, 15.2 attempts for 19.3 points. One full less attempt, and he's giving you a point and a half more. You know, it's just like, it hurts you. And whatever, like, it's all in the numbers and it's minor and whatever, but it hurts you. His offense does not help you. And so if you're in that contingent, then it's like, of course Wendell Carter Jr. is better. Like, of course, one, you don't need to give him 17 shots a game. No one's like, oh, we got to get Wendell Carter the ball. And so just the fact that he's Wendell Carter and they're not trying to force feed him makes him better. Like, they're not just running so many points. Like, if you just cut Vooch's shots in half, just you're only shooting 8 times a game, like, he would automatically be a better player than he is today. Like, so part of it is how we're using him. But, you know, Wendell Carter is probably a better defensive player by a pretty good margin.
I'd agree there, too.
He's definitely a better three-point shooter. You know, like, I don't know. Like, what do you think Vooch does better than Wendell Carter? Maybe he's a better passer. But, geez, like, that's like a really...
I'm just still shocked, though, that we still even have this debate. Like, it's still even there.
Well, he's out all the time, yeah. Right? Like, so if you want to say one thing, what is Vooch better at? He's better at being available. And that means something, right? Like, I don't mean to make that sound like it's nothing. Like, if you can't play, you're worthless. Like, we see that with Lonzo Ball, right? Like, how great is Lonzo Ball for us? Would have been fantastic, maybe, but now he's not because he can never play. He's never on the floor. And Wendell Carter has been not Lonzo Ball-ish for the Magic, but, you know, he's definitely not played as many games as they'd like.
Well said. That's a very good comment in terms of, like, that's what Vooch brings you, durability. That's better. But that said, he makes almost twice as much as you know, Wendell Carter Jr. There's not a GM in the league, if they had the choice of one of those two players, with the exception of the Bulls, who would say they would rather
have him. I don't even think we'd rather have him. Like, so, we might say it publicly because our situation, but I can't imagine if there was an offer straight up to trade Wendell Carter for Vooch that we wouldn't take it. If you could ignore, like, all the political reasons aside, which would stop us. But, like, otherwise, I think we'd be like, yeah, of course. Like, I think even we know. I mean, I can't imagine we don't know that we screwed that up. Like, I don't think it's possible. I think they have to know. You know, this gets back to what we talked about last week or whenever we talked with Darnell's quote of, like, they're trying to keep butts in seats. They're trying to keep the team competitive enough that when you go to a game, it's a reasonable product to watch.
All right, my man, I'm going to bring the big bus in and looking forward to our next discussion. Until next time, let's go Bulls as they begin this West Coast trip. And always great to talk to you.
All right, see you, Fred. Go Bulls.
Take it easy, T.